press conference of the film Solace Point, a film which forms part of the official section of the 65th International Film Festival in San Sebastian. And to talk about the film, we've got the pleasure of having with the leading actor, Michael Lombardi, and with the director, Matthew Porterfield. Okay, perhaps to break the ice, Matthew, could you please give us the whys and whereabouts of how the film started or the project and how it's related to your three previous films that you directed?
Thank you. Thank you all. I think my films always start with a very specific image, usually tied to a particular place. Baltimore, more often than not. I was thinking of friends of mine who have been on house arrest. The sort of the image I think is iconic of the ankle bracelet, the shackle, the lack of mobility that is implied. That was sort of the starting point. And in conceiving this character, I thought a lot about myself, my own deficiencies, and in thinking about his world, I was thinking of my neighborhood and the neighborhood where my grandfather worked for Bethlehem Steel, and I think Keith's journey allows us to meet a lot of citizens of Baltimore across demographics, different ages, and hopefully paints a picture of a contemporary American city. That happens to be also our home.
Thanks.
Oh, you didn't hear the translation?
You can, no. Okay. You
what
can
was the question?
The question was...
I can answer you the question now for you.
Yeah.
Okay. yes. Can you put the headphones on? I did it in Spanish.
Yeah, okay. Could McCall, could you talk us about the experience in the film? Because I think you're also a native of Baltimore, if I'm not mistaken. Oh, volume.
What about Baltimore?
No.
You're also a native of Baltimore.
Yeah, I'm definitely from Baltimore.
Can you talk about your experience working on the film?
Experience working on the film was great. It was very... it was a really cool experience to come home to do a project like this with a guy like this. And so, yeah, it was a special experience, I think, for a lot of us, especially the ones from Baltimore. And like, I, who came out of state to do a movie in Baltimore because I thought that I had to be in L.A. to make a movie. And so that was really refreshing and extremely weird to read a script and see, like, streets that I grew up on and lived my entire life, essentially. And so it was a very, very special experience, I think, for us to tell a story that we felt is a situation or is a story that is told, I think, a little bit too often in real life in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it was a nice experience to tell a story we felt should be told.
Mm.
Okay, questions? Question, another question here in the front row. Another question in the front row.
Hi. Yeah. Can we know what happens after the end of the movie? Do you go back home? Do you run away? What do you do?
Are you saying, can you know, or do you
want
to
I want to know. I'm so intrigued.
Do you know?
Do I know? I have a couple ideas of what happens. I think that's more of the man that created the story's question, rather than mine. But
well, it's something that we thought about, certainly. We even shot some scenes that didn't make it into the film that might have given an audience a more conclusive sense of what was next for Keith. But in the edit, I felt leaving it open to the imagination, Keith continuing his journey. Felt right in this particular moment in time. I thought it had more resonance. But yeah, he's heading home. He's heading back to his dad's house. His dad's probably left the porch light on, and Keith's gonna go inside. Door's unlocked.
Director's cut.
Yeah, right.
yeah.
Okay. ¿Hay más preguntas?
Any further questions? Okay. Well, we'll give you the microphone. That's it. You keep asking questions. Not a problem.
Ton of them. Oh, so no, if nobody wants to ask, I'm going to be here all evening. I want to know about the title. Why are you calling it like that? I don't really know the meaning of it.
Sure. Sellers Point is a road, but it's more than a road. It's sort of shorthand for a particular neighborhood in Dundalk, which was a company town built by Bethlehem Steel. The area is also called Turner Station. I mean, each in Dundalk, in this particular, like the southern tip of Dundalk on the Chesapeake Bay, there are several neighborhoods, each with their own kind of distinct character, all middle class, but divided kind of along lines of, historically divided along lines of race, but in the last, 20 years have become a little more integrated. Sellers Point is a road. There's a high school called Sellers Point Technical High School. So it's a place in keeping with my first two films, Hamilton and Putty Hill, also named after roads and neighborhoods in Baltimore City.
Tenías más, decías?
You have any further questions? You've got more. Well, don't worry. Ask for the microphone.
Keep them coming.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, the actor, how do you get ready for this? Like, what do you think about the script when you got it, and how do you get ready for this role?
When I got the script, I was like a little kid just grinning ear to ear because, I was reading a script taking place where I'm from. So, and again, that's not an often thing. Doesn't happen really often. I mean, unless they're filming like House of Cards up in Maryland, but faking it for DC or The Wire, like everybody knows. But when I got the script, I mean, the character, he's a lot like me, but he's a lot not like me in any way. So I had to deal with, like, for one of the things, I had to talk to my mother for like the whole entire shoot and pre-production, because in the film, my mom's dead and I'm a mama's boy in real life. So I was like, how do I portray loss like that from somebody I love so much if my number one supporter is calling me every day? So I like cut off my mom for 2 months of pre and filming. And so like stuff like that just like to help me just really feel loss. And I moved into the neighborhood that we were filming. The streets that, I don't know if we filmed on that street.
We did.
So one of the streets in the film I'm actually living in. We did a bunch of things so I could.
We visited a state prison together.
We went to the Jessup State Prison in Maryland together, and we met with inmates and picked their brains for a day. And we just tried to get a sense. We met with some real gang members, and they read our script and gave us
some notes
on things we should and shouldn't say, for one. But like it was very authentic. We at least tried to make it as authentic as we can, I think. Just so, I don't know why. Because we do it that way. So yeah, it was a bit of prep for all of us. So yeah.
I'm gonna ask another one.
Yeah.
So yeah, about the character as well. For the director, I guess. What is it about the character that makes him unable to stay out of trouble? How do you think of that character like that?
I think he's a relatively self-hating individual, and that self-hatred manifests itself in self-destructive ways. He's impulsive. He doesn't always think before he acts. But fundamentally, yeah, I was thinking of him as someone who's, on some level really self-hating and critical and unhappy, but doesn't know how to love himself, really, or struggles with it.
Tenemos ahí una pregunta.
Sí, hola.
Hi. My question is for the actor. Okay. McCall, can you hear me? Can you hear me, McCall? Yes. My question is related to the previous American Honey, with that I consider is a film which is quite different to this, because it's a film quote-unquote, is more traditional vis-a-vis script and how it's developed. And my question is, how was it? I don't know whether this is the next film after that you made after American Honey. How different was it to do such a conventional film, which was American Honey, and then confront yourself with this second role that you've played in this film?
It's not coming, it's coming through in Spanish.
Oh, okay. Channel 3.
Oh, you speak English?
Yeah, it was, but I feel more comfortable saying it in Spanish.
Thank you.
No, it's fine. I was.
Can you hear now?
Film American Honey.
Yeah.
It's so different from this one. It's more for me. It was like more improvised. It wasn't that traditional in comparison to this one. And I think this is your second film after American Honey. Maybe I'm mistaken.
You're mistaken.
Well, my question is, how did you prepare the role? And how different it was from the way in which you did American Honey, which was like maybe more improvised, maybe more open.
Well, American Honey was filmed over a longer time span, so we had a full range of months to do what we wanted to do. It was a completely different film than this. This is much more, keeps one sane and intact.
More structured.
Way more structured. But that's how she worked. But the prep for this was much different because in Honey, we didn't go in with a script. None of the cast got a script. So we just kind of went in like, we trust you, here we are. See you in a couple months. It was a different movie. It was a completely different in every aspect of filmmaking, at least for an actor, at least. And to this, I was just talking about my prep for it was mainly just channeling solitude and being alone a lot.
Whereas you were just like on a road trip with the whole cast in American Honey.
Yeah, right? Well, with Honey, you was like, hey, this is going to be your family for 2.5 months. Try not to kill each other. I really don't even know how to answer that question, my friend. Honey was just a completely different thing, different character. My character in Honey was a nutcase. Obviously, you've seen it. Just a completely different flavor of a person. But still kind of like a little bit similar. They're both off-the-wall characters now I'm thinking about it. Like, they're both really willing to fight for the sake of fighting, and they don't really have their brain completely together, and I'm sure that Corey and Honey was probably from a similar city. Well, I mean, I think I'm from Baltimore, Honey.
That's right.
Okay. So, it was just, I'm sure they grew up very similarly. But when Andrea got there and she gave me my character, I knew my character description when we sat down with me and her to like bring a character to life. She just told me to just go crazy on stuff. So I did. I don't know. It was a weird movie. but yeah, somebody please ask another question. Thank you. I hope I gave you something.
going back to the previous question about the director says that the character that hates himself, as you said before, I would like to ask you whether you see in him a rebel without a cause at the same time, because it always seems that he wants to do something to direct his life in one way or another, but he ends up fucking it up. So therefore, another question for the director as well about the character of Jim Belushi, who plays a small role, but very interesting at the same time. What was it like to work with Jim at the same time?
Thanks. Definitely Nick Gray's Rebel Without a Cause was a reference here. I love that movie, and I think in some ways James Dean and McCall's characters have some similarities. They're charming, they have a lot of energy, but they don't know how to direct it. They're unhappy, but they don't know why. Or maybe they do, but they don't know what to do about it.
Feeling trapped.
Yeah, feeling trapped with an explosive energy. It was great working with Jim Belushi. He's a very generous actor, certainly the most experienced actor I've ever worked with. So I learned a lot as well. You know, he's been in many, many films and television, and he does improv theater as well. So he's comfortable on set, but he's also creative and has a lot of ideas and can likes to mix it up, you know, in a way to keep things fresh for him, which I appreciate because it keeps it fresh for the rest of us as well. I thought he was really generous with the other actors, which I also appreciated, you know, because like with that experience, you know, some actors, they might be frustrated working with younger actors. He was also asked to play opposite actors, you know, who had never been in a film before. In the case of that group at the card table, one was a complete novice, one had a little screen experience, but you know, Jim has a ton more. But he was, you know, really patient and giving and creative. You know, and he came down and did this little movie. He can do a lot bigger things. But he believed in the project, connected with the material and the character, and connected with McCall as well. It was great.
Mm-hmm. Have we got any further questions? Have you got still some in the ink pot, or have you finished asking a question? No, you got more questions? Well, let's give this girl a microphone again. Okay.
yeah, I have another one. It's about the music. Why do you choose the music you chose? Everything seems to be like heavy metal, if that's even heavy metal, because I know nothing about music. Uh-huh. But yeah, you know what I mean.
Yeah, I think about music a lot when I'm writing, and then of course when we're editing. You know, some of those scenes were written with kind of musical cues in mind. Some instances we were able to acquire that very music, but in other instances we had to find replacements. And then of course, when you're editing, sometimes you feel, you know, a scene might need something, and then you go and look for it. But from a character place, you know, I really thought that Keith listened to metal. That was his music, and it was also mine when I was growing up. When I was writing the script, I was listening to one album by a doom metal band on Southern Lord Records called Sun, and it really influenced the script and then the direction I took the character. We thought maybe they would do a score, but I've really never had a score for any of my films, and I kind of appreciate just using kind of on-screen cues, diegetic music. And it was mostly local or regional. The rap, the hip hop in the film is regional as well. We worked with great supervisors, secretly Canadian. Is that right? Yeah. And they helped also fill in some blanks. You know, it was my first time working with a music supervisor, you know, who was like a creative collaborator on the film, and they brought some really interesting ideas to the table.
Further question? There's another question here, yes. My question is, it's an ex-convict, and after a home arrest, can't reinsert himself in society, so to speak. You've talked about the hate the character feels for himself. Is that the objective that doesn't let him reinsert himself, and in particular, whether you believe in social reinsertion of ex-convicts?
I certainly do believe in possibility of reentry with support, I think Keith is certainly dealing with some socioeconomic situational conditions that make his reentry difficult. But I didn't really want to critique the federal justice system or the prison system explicitly. This is a character study and a study of a neighborhood, the character of a neighborhood. more than a sort of overt political critique. That would be another film. But yes, I've worked a little, with ex-offenders myself, and know a lot of people that have been out of prison, and totally believe, like, know that rehabilitation is possible. This particular character, he may not go back to prison, but he has made the choice to return to the criminal activity that landed him there in the first place. And that's a choice that he made. He has a lot of support, relatively. I mean, he's got a loving family. You know, even if dad's a little hard on him, he's got a very loving, generous grandmother.
But Keith would never, ever see that.
Right.
So, yeah, I just had to add to that.
Sí. Quizá también...
Perhaps going further in depth in what you've just said, what draws our attention is the fact that the protagonist is white. And perhaps we've got the mission, the vision that it's a bit of a stereotype that these communities, they're always Afro-Americans, the ones that get into jail are related to drugs and violence and so forth. And your film, however, we see that it's also a white person. That say, was that intentional to a certain extent to break down those prejudices and in those stereotypes? Could you go further in depth as regard that issue?
Yeah, thanks for that question. Yeah, definitely always thinking about how whites and blacks, people of color, men, women, of the middle class, which is certainly a diverse spectrum, are represented on screen. I think about questions of representation a lot. You know, we do see a lot of, characters of color in television and films, involved in criminal activity, it's certainly a reality for lots of whites in American cities as well. We're all touched by drugs, I think, or I've found in one way or the other. But yeah, I'm also, you know, as a white man, I'm not going to tell the story of a black ex-convict trying to, you know, re-enter. It doesn't particularly feel like my right. But I do think it's a priority to represent the diversity of the city and the things that sort of unite us rather than the things that divide us. So, you know, there is a common experience within the sort of working lower middle class that does, I think, cross lines of race. I won't say that there isn't, you know, it isn't a very different experience growing up black in Baltimore than it is growing up white, but we're certainly dealing with some of the same things. And I wanted to just try to paint a picture of a community that I know and the diversity that I've found there. And most of the people, you know, in my neighborhood growing up that were involved in drugs, well, actually, almost all of them were whites. And we look at the prison system, and it's pretty mixed. But, you know, in television, we have an interest in portraying, I think, people in maybe limited ways that don't actually reflect the reality of our country.
Thank you. We've got time for one final question, if anyone's... Well, okay, I'm going to ask a question, so that we can finish the press conference. Matthew, your previous films, I think there's a point in common with Solar's Point, that is to say, because they are childhood, sort of, so to speak, or young portrayal, because why do you focus on that period of time or that age of the character?
Thank you. I guess, I have an interest in portraying youth because it's such a time of change, a time when we're in flux, a time when we're presented with challenges, making decisions in the moment, not always sure how to react. It's like a liminal space, you know, which interests me, because I don't know. I find like willful protagonists with a very clear goal that they pursue and then ultimately achieve really false, like, narrative that is abundant in American cinema. And I don't know people who live that way. I live very hand-to-mouth, and many of the people in my life do too. But by focusing on young people, I can really situate that for my, you know, my characters. They're figuring things out. They're reacting to stimulus, but not always in the most productive ways. So I don't know. I think youth is really interesting in our country because there aren't very traditional rites of passage, you know, anymore. Youth is a market. You know, they have incredible power sort of in the media, but they also don't, it's changing, but don't have necessarily much of a voice. So yeah, I've always loved like youth films, whether documentary or fiction, and I teach. I've been a teacher for many years, so I'm surrounded by people of lots of different ages, and I think there's still stories to tell about that demographic.
Thank you very much. If there are no further questions, this is the end of the press conference. I just would like to wish you the best of luck with the film, and thank you very much for being here. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.